iCenter education was organized on a system of different rings, somewhat similar to an ordinary university. Advanced subjects catered for within these rings included evolution, or what they called the science of nature in action, the relationship of intercosmic science, the science of Xati, which is the correct Itibiran phrase for the science of aromatic food processing, the science of intercosmic religion, the science of intercosmic development, which is part of the attachment of neighboring planets, the technical development of oasis planets, and many other advanced techniques such as the Earth has not yet dreamed of. It would be impossible for me to overemphasize the value of the many important Itibiran subjects which future generations on Earth would be wise to pursue in order to follow, although somewhat tardily, the development of other cosmic civilizations. I would like to devote more space to the subjects that I saw taught in the iCenter, but if I did, I would stray from the main theme of cosmic religion and enter the world of Jules Verne, a man who certainly was inspired with prescience concerning future events. On reflection, I am certain that a study of Satara's education and development will show the path that human conduct and behavior will follow, although it will be many hundreds of years before our human descendants achieve the state of development that Satara and his fellow countrymen have long since enjoyed. Satara's education at the General I Computer Centers, to give them their correct title, and at the various rings that he attended, did not differ from the education received by other young Itibirans. On graduating, however, his records were analyzed, he was recognized as a brilliant student, and he was selected for the very exclusive coterie destined to go to Fatex, the Memory of Memory Rings. Fatex students followed a special leadership course that would enable them to hold high office on any one of the five Ran planets that form their planetary system. The very word Ra signifies a group of planets belonging to the one solar system. I might add that all other civilizations had much the same political and educational systems as those enjoyed on Itibiran II. At the Fatex Ra Center, again, I give its full name, Satara was kept busy, along with his colleagues, developing self-assurance, powers of individual leadership, the attribute of courage to make decisions, and the standards of intercosmic intelligence. This was a vast program for the students, but they were helped by the thousands of interplanetary and intercosmic computers, and by the 444 memories of memories, all of which were in continuous contact with Itibiran II and with each other. The Fatex Ra Center explains the very reason for cosmic development. It remains the arbiter for all intercosmic relationships. After graduating from the Fatex Ra Education Center, Satara joined an intercosmic research team. Apart from navigational studies, he worked for the next 50 years on intercosmic biological research. This was the most romantic period of his life, for during it he married several times. Two of his wives belonged to the same research team as himself. Itibiran marriage needs some little explanation. Earth dwellers consider the privileges of marriage to be quite natural. In reality, the consequences, apart from having children, frequently turn out to be the most unnatural, mostly because of the hypocritical restrictions imposed by norms of social behavior. On Itibiran II, however, different norms exist. People that fall in love naturally, marry, and have children as a consequence of that loving union. But the child moves from the family unit to an educational center round about its sixth year. Marriages usually break up soon after the child commences its education. Thus, it is unusual for a marriage to last for more than 6 years or so. The most common cause for the breakdown of marriage is irritation, brought about by boredom, itself the progeny of habit. This custom of short marriages is seen in its true perspective when it is appreciated that, if monogamy were practiced on Itibiran II, some marriages this is entirely in accordance with the cosmic analyses of this theme that the Danish Martinus, 18901981, has made after he in the year 1921, experienced the spiritual expansion of consciousness, which he calls cosmic consciousness, a stage that everyone will achieve, when one is spiritually mature, has enough incarnations and thereby experience to understand this. Ro remark. would have to last for 400 years and more. On Earth, it is the exceptional marriage that lasts for 60 years without the partners falling out of love with each other and becoming irritated by each other's habits. The chances of such an occurrence, therefore, must be multiplied among the Etibirans and other people noted for their longevity. I must confess that I laughed heartily when Satura explained the marriage customs to me. But Satura remained unsmiling. He pointed out that irritation between marriage partners could only be avoided by their complete compatibility. Although scarce, this was not entirely unknown. He gave as examples the marriages of his own parents and of his grandparents. He also pointed out that these long-term unions were not based on permanent sexual love, for passion cannot bloom eternally. Passion is replaced by friendship and companionship, which are other manifestations of love. The Etibirans hold that the more permanent unions of non-sexual love do not need the sanction of a register office ceremony to make them binding, not even a formal exchange of vows. Such a prerequisite for such a union would be a proof of immaturity, a worthless insurance policy attempting to keep a union indissoluble after all feeling had died. There can be no guarantee for the permanence of the state of love. Insisting upon marriage vows, runs the argument, is merely proof that human beings can have no confidence in the lasting quality of love. Satura, after his fourth union of love, had acquired a family of three, one boy and two girls. It was in the year 1887 when he first came into contact with a wonderful woman from the Pentit Sines civilization, a people who enjoy an even longer lifespan than the Etibirans. She was, averred Satura, just such another as Xiti, a woman looking much younger than her actual years. Satura explained that he was not the commander of that particular expedition. He had duties similar to those of any other scientist. Mitis, professionally speaking, enjoyed the same status as himself. Their chance meeting during that particular flight led, Satura assured me, to the greatest love story of his entire life. It had outlasted most marriages based solely on the union of love principle. It had outlasted all the marriages of all his friends and colleagues. Satura and Mitis did not have one permanent home. They had homes in several planets, but by far their favorite home was that at Kota Soti. They reveled in the crystal clear, blue waters of the Kota Soti stream. To this home came their children to spend their precious holidays. Satura explained that they loved their Kota Soti home not only because of the breathtaking beauty of the surrounding scenery, not only because of the fine water sports that they could enjoy, but also because this house was fairly close to where his aged parents lived. This afforded the opportunity for the entire family to meet over the ended holiday period. Mitis, Satura called her his companion of life, had no further contact with her parents, both of whom had remarried on several occasions. There was also the difficulty of distance involved in this permanent separation, for Mitis's parents lived on faraway signs, and it took all of 2 years to travel there from Etibiratu. Very few Sinesians live on Etibiratu, so Mitis devoted herself wholeheartedly to Satura, their children and his friends and colleagues. By all accounts, Mitis still retained her exotic beauty, was possessed of a charming nature, and her love for Satura was as enduring as his for her. This protestation of enduring love, the one for the other, somewhat puzzled me when Satura referred to it. I still remember very well this discussion, which had taken place shortly before they took me to the Peruvian highlands, together with the little girl. I had asked him how he could remain in love when he was separated for such long periods from his beloved, and he had answered that Mitis was right with him on the very control craft and had been with him already at the earlier landings on our planet. I was never able to unravel the enigma. Not to this day have I been able to fathom out who Mitis really was. Naturally, I thought she was one of the many lady scientists with the expedition. In any case, Satura must have had good and sufficient reasons for wanting to keep this part of his life completely secret. The fact that he had told me this much of his private affairs is illustrative of the esteem in which he held me. As Satura had already mentioned the Ennit holiday period, I had also asked him to explain something more about the festivals and holidays which cosmic people celebrate. This additional information I shall include is the last pages of this book. Satura recalled that he had been appointed the religious leader of the equatorial regions of Itibiratu. This included his own home district, for 60 years. He told me, he was the representative, both religious and civil, of the supreme authority of Itibiratu. During his term of office, arrangements had to be made for the reception of several thousand immigrants from the troubled southern sector of Itibiratu. These immigrants were inhabitants of the Sedi region. Sedi may best be translated as the shadow, or somber area of the planet, and was so named because it was always in the shadow of the small working planet that the Itibirans had attached to their own planet. The climate of the Sedi region was cool and unhealthy. The supreme authority, therefore, decided to evacuate the people living there. The evacuation was successfully carried out, and to Satura fell the task of organizing the reception of the immigrants in the equatorial belt. This meant preparing new homes, transportation, jobs, supplies, educational centers, everything that goes into the founding of an entirely new settlement. Satura pointed out that human beings retained a caveman attachment to their homes, loathing to leave them. This is basically because human beings are still very insecure. The Sedians, unlike the rest of the Itibirans, had similar fears to their human cousins, and did not want to leave the Sedi region, unhealthy though it was. Satura had the task also of easing their minds so that the mass migration was accomplished with tranquility. This he succeeded in doing, so that the newcomers soon became completely absorbed into the equatorial settlement. The people who lived in the equatorial region were very happy to welcome their brothers and sisters from the inhospitable Sedi region. Soon, there was a completely integrated community. Many of the new arrivals had biological skills, and these were soon absorbed into the existing plantations. Because of their background, they are perhaps more dour of character than the equatorial people, among whom they now made their home. However, Satura said that it was most rewarding to have seen them soften up under the influence of the more happy-go-lucky, and become eventually as cheerful and optimistic as the original inhabitants of the equatorial region. My friend insisted that all temperaments can be changed by a change of environment. His work, helped by the efforts of Mitis, to assist the new settlers, was often difficult, but at all times they were sustained by the fifth commandment of their religion. The one which says, "You shall work according to your character and talent, and at all times be kind and cheerful. Nor shall you feel superior to others." This, affirmed Satura, was a wonderful commandment indeed, for its application made a new people out of all. The information about the life of Mr. Satura was partly given to me by his sister and partly by himself. What he himself told me about their religion and the festivals, celebrated not only by themselves but most of their friends belonging to what he called an intercosmic ring of civilizations, does not make much sense to us at the present time. He repeated that there were 444 civilizations within the cosmic ring. Because of the vast distances involved, the Itibirans had not made personal contact with every one of these civilizations. However, no matter how remote a civilization, all of them belonged to the same school of cosmophilosophy. All of them followed the same basic educational pattern. This was achieved by direct contact between neighbors, each civilization being a link that bound and taught the next link. At this point, I remember, Satura reeled off the seven fundamental religious laws as though seeking to impress them forever upon my memory: Ruesit, Sikla, Sinva, Sutto, Etas, Oyus, and Ruesit Fin. Although there was no direct personal contact with every civilization within the ring, yet Satura emphasized that there was constant intercosmic communication with all the constituent parts, no matter how distant. Some kind of an intercosmic United Nations, which could keep in touch with all nations in the cosmos. He also pointed out that it was comparatively simple for all planets belonging to their own solar system to keep in touch with one another. I could understand this supreme cosmic communications system. Some of the most powerful Earth observatories have succeeded in picking up radio signals from outer space. These signals, although not understood, are part of the network of communications set up by the 444 civilizations forming the cosmic ring. Satara reflected that this small beginning of picking up cosmic radio signals might pave the way to a fuller communications system involving Earth and the other planets. This itself might lead the way to Earth cosmonauts making the first tentative advances along the road to a fuller intercosmic religious union, in which Earth religions amalgamate with the cosmophilosophic concept of God nature. He was confident about the inevitability of such a union, and hinted that the movement would spread across Earth, spearheaded by leading human scientists and theologians. He did not, however, foresee this occurring until Earth understood the full implications of cosmophilosophy and its health and mind-restoring qualities. Earth, Satara assured me gently, was considered to be an underdeveloped planet, with a warmongering kind of humanity, trying to maintain standards well below those of the average cosmic civilization. The supreme authority of the cosmic ring had decided to keep a watchful eye on the antics of Earth, biding their time until the right moment when, by evolutionary process, Earth would have reached a stage in its development when it could be admitted to full partnership in the cosmic ring. The life of Mr. Satara, far from being concluded, has taught me a great deal about human nature. I no longer believe that our young people are wrong to protest against the cruelty of war. I no longer believe that the hypothesis of the survival of the fittest regardless of morality and ethical qualities makes sense, and I no longer believe that our planet Earth and its population has special privileges in relation to religion and God. But I now believe that at our present stage of evolution, only a strong belief in God nature and love for each other can stop us from destruction. The life of Mr. Satara has also taught me that the mind of man is nothing but the product of natural causes. It is possible, with the help of cosmophilosophy, really to understand our evolutionary destiny. It is possible to stop this race of hatred and turn to love. Footnote: a note from my diary shows this translation from one of the oldest Amatmena quotations: "Your pride in material gains shall lead you to habits and surroundings dangerous to your health and very life." Chapter 22. Cosmophilosophy and the Seven Commandments. Just recently in a South American country, one of those with chronic revolutionary changes, a young Spanish priest, who had arrived only a few weeks before from Europe, was opening his chapel doors, high up in the Sierra. Suddenly a horde of wild-looking bandits, all carrying machine guns, pushed the trembling priest aside and went straight to the altar. They did not want to steal the gold and silver, all they wanted was to confess, and a very long time it took, as the young priest did not understand the guerrilla's Indian dialect. Confessions and absolutions, but mostly absolutions, were what they came for. None of them wanted to die in sin. When they finally left, the nervous priest tried to call his bishop by telephone, but the bandits had cut the wires. So the priest took a horse and galloped 15 miles to the next village. With the help of another priest, he was finally able to talk to Monsignor, his bishop. He had given the bandits absolution for their sins without understanding their confessions. These men, he thought, must have had murder on their conscience. "Do not worry, my son," the bishop answered, "you have done the right thing, because otherwise they would have blown your brains out. Besides, God understands all the languages and dialects on earth." Summing up the lucidity of Monsignor, I would say that God understands not only the languages and dialects on this our planet Earth, but on all the planets wherever they may be and whatever the human beings living on such faraway places. But according to the Etibiran's cosmophilosophic religion, God does not only understand the languages of the human race, he understands the languages and expressions of animals, insects, even such impossible creatures as bacteria. He also understands the rain of the clouds, the warmth of the sun, the cold of the night. According to this religion of nature, God himself is nature and nature is God. The Etibirans do not separate God from nature, they do not separate good from bad, praising the Lord only for the good things and unloading the bad things upon the poor old devil, living in the undeveloped parts of the universe or such old-fashioned places as hell. The Eterbeverans never say, you should love your neighbors, or your enemies, because they feel this to be hypocritical, or a case of blind love. In that case, I was told, we could easily go too far, and include animals, domesticated or wild, and perhaps even turn the other cheek to virus and bacteria. The forces of life, my friends say, are vigorous, and the counterbalances of God's will, which is the result of the relative respect and values we are able to feel for these forces. Therefore, the first commandment of cosmophilosophy is that we shall not fear God nor man nor nature, nor inflict pain on man nor nature. The third commandment quality is this, and adds that the rights of others are to be respected and one must act accordingly. The word respect, the Eterbeveran word eta, also means wariness. Respect the rights of other beings but watch out for your own, and be prepared to defend them. Cosmophilosophy entitles you to enforce your own right to respect. Where does all this lead? It leads to a belief in God nature as the fount of origin of us all. It is the very course God nature has traced for all creatures since the beginning of the universe. Humanity is no exception to this rule. But cosmophilosophy also says this, because of the higher evolutionary pattern of humanity, it is entitled, not to privileges, but to the benefits of its intelligence and understanding of the higher laws of God. These laws, cosmophilosophy teaches, are in advance of our present evolutionary level. Cosmophilosophy is not so much a new religion as an evolutionary state of mind tending to understand the highest laws of God. Let us demonstrate this by referring to a controversial subject and ethical problem such as suicide. The great Roman historian Pliny said the best thing God has given man, amid all the sufferings of this life, is the power to end it when he likes. God has given death as his greatest gift with which to end unbearable pain. I personally know of several people, who, having been tortured during the war, in an agony of pain, and in fear of more, asked God to release them from their sufferings. That suicide should be a sin is absolutely against the will of God. The seventh cosmophilosophic commandment says you shall not let others die in pain, and this includes your own right not to die in pain. Eterbeverans look forward to a very old age, much more than we can hope for. But when old enough to die, they do so without fear or dismay. They know that no doctors or well-meaning relatives are there to keep them alive artificially. They believe it is a sin to prolong the hopeless suffering of any being, not only human beings. Our friends say that in a perfect pattern of life, old age has to be perfect and free of pain. It is unworthy for man to die in pain, for this is not the will of God nature, who has given us the means to avoid pain. But how are the Eterbeverans able to guarantee the observance of such ethical and moral concepts? As I see it, these people, liberated from the handicaps of egoism, have learned to organize the problems of population growth, and use the powers of nature to bring food and health into every home on their planet. They have one and the same language on one and the same motherland. Their homeland is their planet and not a separate piece of country. They have one and the same law and order for all, and most important, they have the same universal system of education and social security, and because of their seventh commandment, they do not fear death. Their thousands of years of progressive development have shown them the absolute need for education and culture. Hence, their fifth commandment, which is called Atas, and the education commandment, you shall at all times work according to your talents and character, and at all times be kind and cheerful, nor shall you feel superior to others. Because of this commandment, the Eterbeverans feel it their duty to develop their talents to the full, and to encourage their children to study according to their individual characters and ability. But this encouragement and development is checked through their infallible computers. It is not merely a question of what an individual thinks and feels he should work at, and create or express, it is also a question of what a sophisticated civilization on such an advanced planet can offer to the younger generations. On our Earth planet, we often talk about morality and religion, But what kind of work are we able to offer our young people so that they may understand this morality and religion? Work is the same as food, and it is no use talking to a hungry man about God. We must create the right jobs for the right people in order to get the best out of people, and this we must do without discrimination or contempt. This the Atabirans express in their Sitla law, the second commandment of cosmophilosophy, which says, "You shall not be a hypocrite to yourself, or to others." The fourth commandment of this philosophy, called the Sutto law, is a rule of which the earthmen of today have a great need to obey. It is that you shall abstain from all excesses. Some earth religions have imposed a prohibition against the eating of certain meats, or the imbibing of certain drinks, certain habits of this and that. But cosmophilosophy forbids all and every excess which none of our religions have so far offered as a remedy against sickness and death. I recall that Mr. Satara did not smoke, but readers will remember that he liked the drink I offered him on the train from Bombay to Madras, and his sister Xiti enjoyed her Tom Collins in the Sky Room in the Hotel Krillin in Lima, Peru. They like to taste things, but they never exaggerate, and I believe the reason for this moderation is the fact that addiction might follow, and addiction leads to death. But you will notice that the fourth commandment does not say don't do it. It gives you the right to do it in moderation, do not do it in excess. Which leads me to my observations about the sexual habits of the Atabirans. I came to the conclusion that their higher evolutionary status has made them much more sensible in their treatment of sex. They believe that sex, if not indulged in excessively, is good for humanity, and we have all the right to know every detail about it. It is part of God nature, they say. It can be a healthy and enjoyable experience which is granted to all creatures by God nature himself. Repression and suppression of these feelings and instincts, they believe, can have cancer-producing factors. These are not presumptions, but biologically proven facts. Discussing this with me, they were sure that many forms of our cancerous civilization are the result of former generations having suppressed their natural feelings. Which brings us back to the first commandment again, "You shall not fear God, man, or nature, nor inflict pain on them." This also includes the pain you may inflict on yourself. In other words again, whatever you do, respect the rights of others, do not behave unnaturally. There is logic behind all cosmophilosophical laws, they are all combined in the will of God nature himself. The first commandment does not say you shall not kill, nor steal, nor do this or that, it just orders you to beware of inflicting pain, physical or mental, on any being, human or animal. If you still have to kill animals, I remember Satara saying, then you have the intelligence to do so without inflicting pain. But you could still kill without inflicting pain. One could do so, I remember telling Mr. Satara, and still keep the first commandment. But my friend answered, you cannot take life without sinning against the law of Sinva. The third commandment of cosmophilosophy, which says, you shall respect the rights of other beings. Isn't it obvious? Why should you want to kill any being not out to destroy you? I do understand now why the Atabirans are vegetarians. I can see the logic of cosmophilosophy, the moral and ethical logic of naturalistic thinking, which according to the Atabirans is the expression of God nature itself. Religion rarely helps the depressive. We must look at religion not as a cure for physical, moral and mental ills, but we must do what our friends have done, look at religion as the natural expression of God nature. God nature does not say to the sick and depressed, go and hide in some dark corner and start praying. God nature definitely says to all its creatures, get well or die. Only if we are willing to face this fact which is God's own intelligence and reality, shall we get well. God nature, therefore, does not want us to look at ourselves as being sick and ill, but as human beings still able to make friends with God's own beneficial forces of nature, willing to help us to get on our feet again. This also includes our present stage of general contempt, hatred and worldwide hypocrisy, our preparing for war while talking about peace for all. It is only old-fashioned fear and superstition which keeps us from new and fundamental naturalistic reasoning, from making friends with our imaginary enemies, from making friends with ourselves. It was Satura himself who told me that any religious organization which preaches love and compassion without a clear and natural concept leading to the understanding of God nature, shall be called a religion of hypocrisy.